Are you an HR department of one trying to figure out how to balance task and strategy while keeping up with changes in regulatory compliance? Do you need a fresh outlook on old topics? Then stop what you're doing, grab your coffee, and get ready to recharge. If you have people, you have problems to solve and things to do. Your host is Brenda Neckvottle, a 20-year human resource professional, ready to explore the HR industry with veterans of business and life with fresh eyes and new ideas. Learn about the rapidly evolving changes in employment law around the country, as well as new tactics to deploy and build engagement in your workforce. If you're looking to implement new practices to make your job easier in HR, then this podcast is for you.
Hello and welcome there to the Best Practices in Human Resources podcast. I am Brenda, the HR lady, and I'd like to thank you for tuning in and listening. Now, if you're a returning listener, you guys are absolutely awesome. Thank you so much for returning for yet another episode. And if you're a first-time listener, we're not here to scare you off. Thank you as well for coming on board. And you know what? My job, I'm here to share with you the strategic and the tactical HR knowledge so that you can master the what and the how in this field, because I'm in the human business, and that means a greater number of dynamics in the workplace to balance and manage. So we've had all sorts of stuff happening lately. Holy cow. So if you've been following, you know that the book released. It's Best Practices in Human Resources, How to Claw Your Way from Wannabe to VP. It made bestseller rank, which is absolutely awesome. So it is a best-selling book, getting all sorts of really awesome feedback on it. If you haven't picked up your copy, you know, by all means, go ahead and hop on over to Amazon.com. You can actually search for the book just by putting in Brenda the HR Lady, and it will pop right on up for you. It's been a lot of fun. So I've heard some pretty, I guess I've gotten some pretty great feedback on it. And you know what? I'm going to be traveling a little bit coming up and would love to start meeting people. So my partner in crime, Suzanne Lucas, we do the Real HR show together. She and I are doing a national tour, a 3-city tour. We're going to be in Baltimore on July 19th. We're going to be in Dallas on July 21st, and we're going to be in Utah, Provo, Utah, on July 22nd. Now, we're talking about how HR professionals can win in HR. So if you have that thought in your mind, like how, I really wish people would just listen to HR the first time. Well, we're going to be talking about some of that stuff. And we're going to talk about, you know, building the right kind of mindset. What do you need in order to win in HR? And what's awesome about it is that if you attend, you get 4 recertification credits for that session. But if you are in Provo, Utah, and we're going to stream this over as well, we're actually going to make this available to those who attend our Baltimore and our Dallas event, that we're going to be doing I'm going to be doing an active shooter training. And what we're going to do is we're going to talk about how do you de-escalate the fear on teaching active shooter training in your company, but yet raise the confidence in doing so. It's a great program. This is a program that we were going to kick off last year with my old partner, Dave Acosta, but unfortunately he passed away 4 days before. And now I get an opportunity to go ahead and teach that. So we would love to see you. And if you want to get, you know, look, get it. So you can actually total, you do all events, or, you know, you'll do the winning in HR session plus the active shooter training. You can get up to 6 recertification credits. So it's going to be absolutely awesome. We're looking forward to seeing people there. We know that this is going to sell out. So you want to get your tickets early, get your seats reserved. You can find the link to get there at BrendaTheHRLady.com, and we're just going to have an awesome time. So Suzanne is coming in from Switzerland, and this is a really great opportunity to meet both of us at the same time, as we like to meet the people that we run into and we talk to, and that we experience through all this. It's pretty fantastic. It's pretty great. So looking forward to that. And okay, I have to tell you something. If you are looking to treat yourself for something pretty fantastic, Holy cow. Oh, man, do I have the thing for you. So you remember a while back we had Will on from Naked Warrior Recovery, and he was talking about the benefits of using broad spectrum CD. Well, guess what? He brought out a new product, and I am just in heaven over it. So I've gone back into the gym, which if you've been listening long enough, you have learned that I hate going to the gym. I really don't like it. But I have been really working on making some life changes. I've been, you know, crushing workouts. I'm now day 12 in a row of doing this. And yesterday when I went in, it wasn't my best day. It was a rough one. I have these teenagers that are in high school. They're really nice guys, but they sit on the machines forever. And my program is like, I only have 60 seconds in between my reps. And that includes getting to the next machine after cleaning it off. So waiting or getting out of my rhythm, out of my, you know, assigned cycle, because it's very strategic what I'm doing, that just stinks. So it's very frustrating. But so I was in my head about, you know, just stuff. And then I was working out and I was frustrated because I couldn't do my thing within a certain period of time. So it wasn't my best workout, and I had to push it extra hard because I was using extra weight. I do strength training to, you know, trim the fat and build muscle, not to beef up and compete or anything like that, but I have a goal of what I want to look like. So I tell you that to tell you this. I came home, I was very frustrated. Matter of fact, it was one of those workouts where you can't write because your arms are like still jiggly from working all that weight that you were working before. So, I got the new shipment of bath bombs, CBD infused bath bombs. Oh my gosh. Holy cow. These things are incredible. So I popped one in the tub. I sat in there for 20, 30 minutes. And I got to tell you something. I had the best sleep ever. I mean, I also popped a gummy. I did my, you know, CBD gummies as well. I do only two a day, one starting at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and then one right before I go to sleep. But with that bath bomb in there, oh my word. Holy cow. That was amazing. And if you haven't heard about any of this, you can check out episode 78 of the show. You'll hear all you need to hear about Will and the use of CBD. But you know what? Use my code. If you go to the website, which is Naked Warrior Recovery, it's nw-recovery.com. Use my code, NakedHR. Now, I don't get paid for any of this, right? I just happen to love the product so much. Use NakedHR. You're going to get 20% off your first order. And why not do it on bath bombs? Holy cow. The fragrance is amazing. It's lavender. It's a good lavender fragrance, you know, because some of them are just a little weird. But this is just amazing. And oh, yeah, it was, I just felt, I was in zen. Like, I made it there. Oh, my word. All right. So we've got another friend that we like to talk about. His name is Alex Clegg. Alex is an awesome guy. He's an advisor with Forest Capital Management, and they are an independent financial advisory firm that helps small and medium-sized businesses really take a look and optimize their retirement plan. So whether you have a 401k, you have a 401(3b) or a pension or something else, it's really hard to stay up to date on the changing industry landscape, and they can help plan sponsors navigate those changes by focusing on improving the fiduciary governance of the plan, how to do benchmark plan design, and reducing expenses. So listen, if you're interested, learn more, go ask them for a free plan analysis. Tell them I sent you. It's a really good idea. Contact Alex and he'll be more than happy to help you out. And you can reach him at, and his email is aclegg, A-C-L-E-G-G at Forest, F-O-R-E-S-T, like the trees in the woods, C-A-P-M.com. That's A-C-L-E-G-G at Forest, F-O-R-E-S-T, C-A-P-M.com. All right, so the information that is available in this podcast is, in fact, for informational purposes only and not for the purpose of providing legal advice. You should contact your attorney to obtain legal advice with respects to any particular issue that you may have. And if you do not have an employment attorney, you may go ahead and contact us, and we'll be able to refer one to you through our friends over at Jackson Lewis. All right, so today we're going to be talking about non-competes coming under fire. And had a really great conversation today over on Clubhouse, and this is what we talked about. So give us a few minutes. We're going to tell you a little bit more about the Honor Foundation, and then we're going to get right into it.
There are approximately 2,500 members of the U.S. Special Operations community who transition out of active duty military service every single year. The Honor Foundation has dedicated its mission to serving these elite individuals on their journey to prepare for life once they take off the uniform. In the past few years, we've begun our own journey to reach this number, launching 3 physical campuses in San Diego, California, Virginia Beach, Virginia, and near Wilmington, North Carolina, along with a virtual campus to reach members of the community anywhere on the planet. I spent 26 years in the Special Operations community as a SEAL. I graduated from THS program, I served on the board of directors, and now I'm proud to lead this organization into the future to continue assisting these transitioning service members and their families. Our dedicated team, our world-class program, and our incredible tribes of supporters are standing by to help THF alumni and future fellows, and are committed to providing the best possible support system and resources to better serve this community. Our vision for the Honor Foundation is clear: to impact every transitioning service member from the U.S. Special Operations Enterprise through our programs and support, and to be a catalyst for overhauling the entire DoD transition program. It's a big task, but the community deserves it, and we're driving full steam ahead to make this a reality. If you've been inspired with what the Honor Foundation's done in the last 5 years, I welcome you all to join us as we craft the next chapter in defining what it means to serve others with honor for life.
All right, welcome everybody over in Clubhouse. I am Brenda, the HR lady, and today we're going to be taking a look at a progressing challenge that is coming up in our employment law landscape. And it's not something that just impacts government contractors, it impacts everybody, but we'll cover all of that. So this is kind of like a twofer. So if you're a federal contractor or state contractor, or if you're just a regular employer, this is going to be pretty very enlightening information. So it's popping up again. I talked about this a while ago, and what we are looking at is the move to actually eliminate certain types of employment contracts. And what I mean by that is it has been no surprise to anybody. And something that has been that the president has campaigned on is the focus on banning non-compete agreements. Now, there's some additional movement that has taken place on this. So this has been an immediate topic very shortly after he was sworn into office. And there's additional support coming in from other areas. So it's not just taking place at the federal level. Nevada instantly just recently made some amendments to the non-compete statute. And we've got some information. This actually is information that came out of Jackson Lewis recently, that Nevada is working to actually ban, and they actually will ban, non-compete agreements with hourly workers and limit the employer's ability to sue or to enforce certain customer servicing restrictions. Now, the law also will extend to the required judicial, what they would consider blue pencil process, to actions which are brought by employees challenging the non-compete covenants itself. Now, the particular legal infrastructure around this was recently signed in place by the governor. It right now, it doesn't specify any type of an effective date. Therefore, it will actually go into effect on the 1st of October, pursuant to Nevada law. And basically what this does is that the new law, which is called the Assembly Bill 47, or AB 47 for short, bans non-compete covenants for employees who are paid solely on an hourly basis, exclusive of any type of tips or gratuity. Now, the law apparently does not affect covenants for hourly employees who also receive bonuses, profit sharing, or any form of commission from the employer as well. However, if the employer or the employee files a lawsuit to enforce or challenge the non-compete covenant and the court finds that the covenant is unlawful because it applies to an employee's paid solely on hourly wage basis, the court is required to award the employee their reasonable attorney fees and costs. So this is starting to gain momentum in the country. And when we see states that are starting to gain momentum around an agenda of a president, regardless of whether it's Democratic or Republican, it doesn't matter, then that means that this is one of those things that you have to keep your eye on. And inevitably, if it doesn't move forward at the federal level, ultimately what starts to happen is that you'll see that we'd start developing patchwork law, which means that if you have employees in multiple states, you're going to have to really start paying attention to which state you can do what in. Okay. Now, according to this article, the new law makes it clear that an employer may not bring in an action seeking to restrict any of the activities that I'm about ready to list, even if the agreement itself does not explicitly do so. So in the resolution that also is attached to this article, it prohibits covenants that restrict a former employee from providing services to a former customer or client if, number one, the former employee did not solicit the former customer or client, number two, the customer or client voluntarily chose to leave and seek services from the employee, and number three, the former employee is otherwise complying with the limitations in the non-compete covenant as time, geographical area, and scope or activity are to be restrained. Now, moving on, it says if the employer or the employee files a lawsuit regarding covenants with the former employee, the court finds that the employer has wrongfully restricted or attempted to restrict the former employee from providing services to customers or clients in the manner described above, and the court is once again required to award the employee their reasonable attorney fees and costs. Now, for those of you who are just joining us in, this is specifically for the state of Nevada. The new law also extends the required judicial reformation process to actions brought by employees challenging a non-compete covenant, which gives the employers fair opportunity. So this is still very broad. And ultimately, what will happen is that, you know, this is going to go into effect. People are going to go, okay, but what about this? And what about that? Not really quite sure what's going on. And eventually, we'll get our best practices through litigation and court determinations. So if you're in Nevada, now is a really great time to start looking at your non-competes to make sure that you are starting to line up and become compliant to that before this goes into effect on October 1st. There's no information in here as to whether or not this is grandfathered or not. Current agreements are grandfathered. It's very likely that based on what comes out of litigation, if you're in Nevada, you may wind up having to actually revisit or renew a current non-compete agreement. But so that's that for Nevada. But ultimately, this is starting to move through the United States. This is one of the few things that I've seen on this for a little while. You know, there's a lot going on over in Washington, D.C. It was a very rapid plan that was rolled out. There's a lot of stuff that the White House is currently pursuing. This is one of them still, but there's been a little bit of a slowdown. But now that we start to see that other states, well, Nevada is really the first, but if other states are starting to jump onto this, therefore this thing has started to grow legs. And you as employers need to be on top of this. Now, when it comes to government contracting, there's a lot of companies that rely on non-competes in government contracting because of the ability to remain competitive. Companies need to remain competitive to serve the government, right? So here we go. This goes back to, if you've been following me, you'll know that my number one live and die rule in government contracting is that the same body of government that tells you that you have to do something, you know, comply with a certain law, is the same body of government that's going to put you into a position to violate it. Now, nobody out there in the government is saying that you have to have a non-compete agreement, with the exception of enforcing the protection of your employees' lists. Then a court's going to tell you, well, you know what? You should have had a non-compete agreement. And now we're faced with the fact that this is actually rolling out and the government is now pursuing, government as a whole, which includes state right? There's an aspect of that that is now starting to charge or starting to move forward with eradicating certain elements of a non-compete agreement, particularly for hourly employees, which can make things kind of difficult because not every hourly employee doesn't have access to higher level information. And so that actually will make competing pretty challenging, all right? So one of the big questions is like, where does some of this stuff come from? Well, that comes with the research, okay? One of the concerns, and this is based from an article, I'll share some snippets of this to you, that came out through Bloomberg Law back in February 5th, all right, of 2021. And there's one pressing issue that has been highlighted that is driving this, and it appears to be affecting a large segment of working people, and that is the non-compete clause as it restrains workers' freedoms after they leave their current job. All right. Now, again, even says right here in the article that President Biden has made no secret of the hostility to non-compete clauses for workers. And as the vice president in 2015, he condemned these contracts for depriving workers of the freedom to negotiate for higher wage with a company or to find another job after they've been laid off. So this part right here, just that general statement, is where I'm going to present an argument that there is nothing in a non-compete that prohibits employees of finding another job, period. There are certain aspects of a non-compete that may make things challenging for exiting employees to find a job for a competitor or in the same industry that they're coming from. But understand that some of this stuff, as I see it now, I'm saying this from a position of having helped over 500 small businesses, and there's only so many HR professionals that can say that they have touched literally that amount of companies, and I still continue to grow that number, even to this day. That non-competes, it depends on the industry, it depends on the physical location, and I think a lot of these articles are presenting in a more narrow view. However, there is some statistics that actually do back this up, okay? Not to mention that some of this has been related to where, according to the data that I'm finding and the data here that is highlighted in here, there are some statements in general that are starting to say that it's also prohibiting employees from actually starting companies on their own. Well, look, we just had this huge COVID shift. And there's a lot of people who have been starting businesses on their own, especially when they lost their jobs. But they're starting businesses that also aren't part of the same type of work that they've been doing. So there is, in my estimation, a level of inflation around this, but nonetheless, this is very much in the crosshairs. All right. So there's some data that I definitely do want to share with you guys. All right. So here's some of the concern. And the editor of this article, the author of this article, which is from Bloomberg Law, which is titled "Biden Can Free Millions from a Coercive Employment Contract" or "From Coercive Employment Contracts." This is published February 5th, 2021, by a gentleman by the name of Sandeep Vahisan. All right. Now, one of the things that they're talking about is that the president has a chance to make good on one of his past statements, condemning the use of non-compete clauses for American workers by making good appointments to the Federal Trade Commission. So that's one of the angles that they're using to do this. All right. And he's a legal director at the Open Market Institute. Non-competes, according to the statement, it limits workers' exit options and suppresses fair wages. Okay. Now, back in December 2019, it was an article that he co-wrote on non-competes, and he said that we should really get rid of non-compete clauses and no poaching agreements that do nothing but suppress wages. And the campaign affirmed that the commitment is part of a broader program to empower workers. Now, we know that our president is very much a worker-friendly president, okay? And in this case, the author is stating that Biden does have the power to free workers from a coercive non-compete clause through good appointments that are taking place over in the Federal Trade Commission. All right. So that's where it's coming out. That's how it's actually happening. That's what you want to start keeping your eyes on. Okay. Not to block it, not to challenge it, but to be knowledgeable as to what you need to do when this does come down the pike. Right. So some of the concerns around it is that some of the research that has come out that non-compete clauses reduce wages and wage growth over time. That's one of them. But according to the article, they can also trap workers in an abusive and discriminatory work environment because a bad boss and a paycheck is, for most people, preferable to no paycheck. So this is where I'm going to argue that statement, is that there's nothing in this world that requires an employee to stay in an abusive relationship at work, but yet is not able to go out and get another job, regardless, all right? So I've been in that position where I have not worked in a healthy environment. And you know what? I went out and I got another job somewhere else. It wasn't in the same industry. So there's nothing there. So this is a very limited mindset as it pertains to that. Yes, there is sometimes that stuff does happen. Yes, sometimes there are discriminatory work environments. We know that. But there's nothing out there that says that people can't make a shift in their life and actually work to get a position somewhere else in another company that's not in the same industry, utilizing the same top skills that they actually have. Okay. So yes, there is a little bit of inflation going on here, and I'm going to keep moving on. Okay. So one of the things that he cites is that in medicine, the enforcement of a non-compete against a physician can actually compel unemployment or a relocation and sever longstanding doctor-patient relationships. Employers therefore present non-compete clauses on a take-it-or-leave-it basis and rarely face resistance from new hires who feel pressure to accept employment offers to pay rent, utilities, and other obligations and cannot easily turn down work. Well, most people when I've been in the seat, and I have onboarded quite a few in my day, and I still help with some of this stuff, I have rarely even seen anybody ask a question about a non-compete, more or less read it. Very few people actually read protective covenants. They just sign, right? They just sign. That's all they do. So there are people that do have some challenges against non-competes or confidentiality agreements. There was one that I was asked to sign a while ago, and I came back with the feedback that, listen, this is not clearly defined. I've reviewed this with my attorney. I'm not comfortable signing this, and here's the reason why. Right? So everybody has the ability to do that. Not everybody cares to do it. Some people are like, oh, well, I'm never going to tell any secrets. No, I'm not going to take stuff from the company. That's ridiculous, right? So I think there are some industries where, yes, this could apply, but there are other industries and other opportunities and other positions where it doesn't, okay? So employers who claim that they need non-competes to protect customer lists and other proprietary information from rivals have more targeted tools at their disposal. I would like to know what those are. Okay. They can use trade secret law to protect in-house know-how. Yes, to a degree, but that means that they actually have to go out and prosecute the person. Okay. Employers concerned about departures can keep workers by offering regular raises and promotions and loyalty bonuses if they stay for a specified period of time. Well, what if it's a bad employee? And that in person is actually losing money and degrading the culture. Would you necessarily want to do that? And not to mention, what if that individual were to actually like create a problem in the company, and all of a sudden you're giving them raises and promotions and loyalty bonuses, and they're a horrible employee. And the day you have to fire them, you've now just made it 10 times difficult to do so, particularly if it's an employment violation. So if the employee violated something, or if they've harassed somebody, right? Because usually there's a lot of that stuff that comes with somebody who is not a stellar employee, at least in some fashion, right? So that just makes it really difficult. So this is written by a person who doesn't understand the nuances of what's going on, okay? They really, really don't. But yes, it is hard to retain workers as it is, okay? It really is. But there, just some of the argument coming out on this is that non-compete clauses actually lock people in. Don't necessarily agree with that. And I am particularly concerned about employees capturing and selling personal information or client information. If you look at different companies to where these are really high risks, not only just for government contractors, but let's look at the finance sector. What would happen if an employee were to steal an employer's database of client information that included, because in the financial sector, you have this, not only their address, but their social security number, the date of birth, and the driver's license. That now, like, just screams privacy laws in a whole other area. So, again, the same body of government that tells you that you have to abide by laws, the same body of government that's telling you that puts you in a position to violate it, okay? So protecting proprietary information doesn't just go from the trade secrets of the organization. It also pertains to the protections around the information that the company is now required to hold on to. Look at car dealerships, right? There are a lot of people. Car dealerships are one of the biggest ones that get hit. Sales consultants come in, they you know, create a laundry list of leads. Some of those go in, buy a car, go through financing, and all of that information is open and available to that person. If they steal that, what's to say that they're also not stealing their PII? When you go in for employment, government contractors, right? They come in, they're giving you, again, name, address, social security number. Some of those things have to go into different government positions. Like if they have to get a background check of some kind, or they go in for security clearance. And what happens if somebody steals that information, or they steal key employer employee information during a request for proposal? Those things are important. What happens if somebody uses that same information and uses it inappropriately and unlawfully as an identity theft? So there's a lot more to this than what you're seeing in the media behind the scenes. And some of this stuff is written by people who don't understand those nuances. Okay. They really don't. So if you look at some of the information that is out there that kind of fuels this, because I have personally, I'm going to be honest with you, I've struggled trying to understand what is actually fueling this. Like, why are we coming up with this? And I am very much about understanding the why. I have to understand the why to wrap my brain around the reasoning. And so, especially when it's reasoning that doesn't make sense to me. You know, I've been doing this a long time. And so I've seen all of these things that I've just described. Every single one of them. I've seen salespeople steal lists more times than I can count. I've seen it's a long time ago, I saw a business owner who sold his company to another organization, was kept on as a consultant, take his own blueprints and own technology that he sold, started his own company, literally not even a quarter of a mile down the road. They were in the same warehousing unit, the same industrial area where they have a setup. We're building the exact same product and starting to compete against the very same company that he sold and was retained as an employer, as an employer, but as a consultant. He's now competing against something that he just earned millions of dollars for. Ultimately, what happened once he started competing and the company that he just sold figured it out, they sued him. And you know what? The end of the day, not only were they able to retain the legal rights to the information, because yes, he did sign a non-compete. He signed it in a couple of different ways. He signed it as an employee. He also signed it as in the transition of, you know, purchase of the company, a non-compete. He actually went out and did this, and he lost all of the millions, or a pretty good chunk of it, after selling that company, because they went out with him with the full force of the law behind him, because he was competing against his own product, which is crazy. But I've seen it, right? So there's some information that has come out. There was a study. You can research this if you want to look at it. It's 36 pages. I'm sure it's an entertaining read. But it came from the Office of Economic Policy as part of the United States Department of the Treasury. And the study is titled A Non-Compete Contracts, the Economic Relief, Economic Effects and Policy Implications, dated in March 2016. And it talks about the non-competes and their justifications, what they can say about non-competes, the details of non-compete enforcement, the effects of non-compete enforcement, and directions for reform. Those are, you know, their actual recommendations, okay? There are some of the benefits that they highlight is like non-competes are sometimes used to protect trade secrets. Yep, absolutely, which can promote innovation. Totally agree, right? Another thing that it has benefits is that reducing the probability of a worker exit, non-compete may increase employers' incentives to provide costly training. And lastly, employers with especially high turnovers could use non-competes to match with workers who have a low desire to switch jobs in the future. Can't argue with those points. So what they're also coming back with is a counter is that non-competes can also impose large costs on workers, such as workers' bargaining power is reduced after non-compete is signed, possibly leading to lower wages. I would very much like to know more about that, because that's not the intention of a non-compete. If somebody is using a non-compete in that manner, then yes, that likely is abusive. Next point is that non-compete sometimes induce work to leave their occupations entirely, foregoing accumulated training and experience in their field. Well, that's got to be a pretty narrow field, because in the government contracting sector, let's just look at aerospace in general. There's a lot of things that an engineer can do in the field of aerospace. There's a lot of engineering need going on. And if you have somebody off the top of my head that works for one rocket company and is searching for a job and they're under a non-compete, well, that means that they can't go work at another rocket company, but that doesn't preclude them from going to work building aircraft engines, building aircraft bodies, working on a physical launch pad in aerospace. What about working on missiles and other defense things? What about the private sector? What about building airplanes, private airplanes, not just commercial, but what about private, right? So there's a lot that goes on. So that's where I can punch some holes in. Now, there could be some real specific stuff. Like in government contracting, we do see this, that in certain areas, physical locations, that there's only going to be so many people that understand how to do something. But you know what? That is the exception. That's not the rule. And I've been doing this, like I said, a long time. I've seen a number of government contractors. I've seen a number of different employers. I myself have a 26-year retail career that's tied into all of that. Look, just because I may work for a retail organization that sells pet products, that doesn't mean that I can't take my experience, my knowledge, my wins, my victories, and go work for a retail operation that sells bicycles, right? So there's things that don't work. Lastly, they're also stating that the reduced job chum that is caused by non-competes is itself a concern for the U.S. economy. Chum's what you throw in the water to attract sharks. Not good. Job churn helps to raise labor productivity by achieving a better matching of workers and firms and may facilitate the development of industrial clusters like Silicon Valley. Now, that's a good point. Silicon Valley is the exception and not the rule, okay? We do have some little pockets here in the United States. Silicon Valley is one of them, okay? Aberdeen up in Maryland, that's a big aerospace area, right? Then you've got Wallops Island that's in the northern part of Virginia. That's all rocket people right over there, right? And then you've got the Cape down in Florida. You've got Vanderbilt, which supports SpaceX and other launches that take place, other NASA stuff. And then down in Texas, where they just recently tested another SpaceX engine. Yeah, we have these little pockets of technology that have that, right? But if you look at a hospital system, for instance, and if you have a big metropolitan area in a hospital system, let's just like Dallas-Fort Worth, for instance, right? Not only do you have Dallas, but then you have all these other little tiny towns that are around it. You've got Plano, you've got Addison, you've got Frisco, for instance, right? This is like the only three that I really know. Give me credit for knowing that one. But you know, if you work for a hospital in Dallas, that doesn't preclude you from being able, especially if you live in the middle between the two, that doesn't preclude you from going potentially to go work for another hospital system in Fort Worth. Possibly. You know, what is a nurse going to do? Steal the clientele from a hospital system in Dallas and take them all over to Fort Worth? No, come on. Some of this doesn't make sense, right? So that's where some of this is starting to come out of. All right. And there's some data in here, which is actually gives you some hardcore data, which is really great. But then you also have some other topics that don't make sense. Okay. There's some information that came out from an organization called the Economic Innovation Group. And I'm not slamming anything. I just challenging a little bit of what I'm reading here. And we talk about the use and the abuse. It's called the use, abuse, and enforceability of non-competes and no poaching agreements. And their opening statement has talked about how over the last 40 years, the startup rate has halved, the job mobility has declined 22%, and real wages for the bottom 90% of earners have grown only by 0.4% per year, with the lowest 10% of earners seeing real wages fall by 5% over this period. We're talking about the bottom 90% of earners. And that is usually not the number, those usually aren't the folks that are being faced with a non-compete agreement. Not typically. Well, no, that's not true. I had math in my head a little bit differently. I was thinking of the lower 1%. Yes, lower 90% of employers, we do see those. All right, I'm going to correct that statement. I am totally going to correct that statement. All right, most of us would work who would be, yeah, we're in, you know where I'm going with this. 90%, yes, we're in that 90%. Sorry, I had the math all backwards in my head. I hate being dyslexic as a result of that. That's a really good example of what I get to go through on a regular basis. Sometimes I have to think things through again before I get it right. Okay, so, and what they were talking about here in 2014, and I believe this report came out in 2019 or 16, hang on a second, February 2019. So we're talking about which 2014 covered approximately one out of every five labor force participants in the United States prohibit individuals from joining or restarting competing businesses, typically within time and geographic boundaries. Now, the use of a non-compete is so pervasive that even volunteers in nonprofit organizations in states that don't even enforce them are asked to sign away their post-employment freedom. So I am absolutely not for nonprofit organizations asking volunteers to sign non-compete and protective covenants. Never been a fan of that. Okay. Volunteers are volunteers. If you want to keep volunteers in, don't ask them to start getting into stuff that looks and sounds a lot more like employment. Okay. No, according to this, no poach agreements, which are compacts between employers do not to hire workers from each other, have also spread. And an estimate suggests that cover nearly 60% of major franchises in the United States back in 2016. I didn't hear about a non-poaching agreement until a year ago. And I've been doing this for 23 years. So I can see how non-poach agreements actually take place in Silicon Valley. But you know what? Those are more often than not are agreements that are made between CEOs to ensure that in a good environment, competition remains healthy. So that means that back in the day, if this agreement had existed, just to kind of give you an example, Best Buy would not be able to compete, would not be able to recruit from Circuit City, and vice versa. That was a mutual agreement between the two organizations. Okay. Now, let's go on. Now, some of this information I really don't agree with. Now, it's particularly, especially now that the stuff is out there and circulating, and it's constantly being quoted and recycled, right? Just the reason why you have to go in and you have to do your research. You have, when you read, you also have to question. And I'm just going to give you my opinions, and I'll explain why my opinions are coming out. And a lot of it just comes from what I've seen. Now, that doesn't mean that I see everything across the country, but like I said, I've been doing this a while, and I don't necessarily see these things that are coming out. But what, as I'm going through this research, what I'm finding is that I think there's some stretching going on a little bit, right? There's some inflation going on. Now, in another article that was written called Non-Compete Agreements, the ubiquitous harmful to wages and to competition, and part of a growing trend of employers requiring workers to sign away their rights. And this came out December 10th of 2019. Now, the reason why I'm telling you these dates is that COVID has now made another shift. Okay. So we've got the White House acting on now old data that so far I've seen go back all the way to 2014. Now, I'm not saying it's bad. That's what they're working on. Okay. We have seen such a huge shift out of COVID, and we know that people are struggling to find employees, right? So these things may not necessarily hold. Some of these arguments may not necessarily hold as much water. Maybe, I don't know, okay? I'm just saying keep your mind open and don't drink the Kool-Aid fast, especially in a business where you as the HR person is put in a position to help find that very delicate balance, doing what's in the best interest of the employee and doing what's in the best interest of the employer. It's not easy, right? And so this is an example of some of that critical thinking. So I don't have a problem saying what's on my mind, because these are aspects of it that I'm challenging, not the whole thing. Do I think non-competes should be exercised with everybody? No, I don't. I don't think it makes sense. But I do agree with it when it makes sense. Matter of fact, I agree with a lot of things when it makes sense to me. I don't disagree with things when they make sense to me, okay? Unless it's a disagreement that makes sense that you're disagreeing. But wow, we could really go down that word knot, can't we? Okay. So in this particular article, they're talking about, let's see the information. Ah, here you go. One of the things that it's challenging is that given that non-competes limit the abilities of individuals to start businesses or take other jobs, it's not difficult to see that non-competes may be contributing to the decline and dynamism in the United States labor market, which is a word I'm going to have to look up. So this report that they're citing is using data from a national survey, a survey of a private sector American business establishments to investigate the extent of non-compete usage. Here's where you really want to be careful about what you're reading, okay? So it's coming back by saying nearly 49.4% of responding establishments, which we don't know how many were tested, indicate that at least some employees in their establishment were required to enter into a non-compete agreement. That should not surprise you, especially if it's an establishment to where people have access to proprietary information, right? So I'm not really surprised there. Nearly a third, which is 31.8% of the responding establishments, and again, we don't know how many were polled, indicated that all employees in their establishments were required to enter into a non-compete agreement regardless of pay or job duties. You know what? I'm going to sit there and say that, you know, small businesses, that makes sense that that could happen. I've seen that a lot. I don't see that in major corporations. So we don't know who's being surveyed. We don't know the size of the organization that's being surveyed, and we don't know how many. Okay. This is the kind of stuff I learned in sixth grade. Right here. It's coming out. All right. Algebra, I have yet to find a place for, but this stuff that we're going through has stuck with me since the sixth grade. All right. So the survey data actually does not allow this company, the people who did the study, the precise share of workers nationwide that are subject to non-compete agreements. However, Here you go. This is where you have to be careful. We can calculate a range and we can find somewhere, sit down for this, between 27.8% and 46.5% of private sector workers are subject to non-competes. Well, how can you calculate that? That needs to be explained, okay? Applying to this share to today's private sector workers of 129.3 million means that somewhere between 36 million and 60 million of private sector workers are subjected to non-compete agreements. Well, let's take a look and see what that number actually means. So let's do some math here. My calculator will work. So, oh, come on, turn on. There we go. 129.3 million. And we have 36 million. Let's just do 36 million. So 36 divided by 129. That's 27%. 27% of the private sector workers at the bottom level are subjected to non-compete agreements. Now I ask you this, does that seem like a big number? Okay. So this is a really great example of critical thinking and thinking through stuff, whether you agree with it or not. These are the types of things that you should be looking at and challenging and asking those questions. All right. So let's take a look at 60 million. All right, so 60 million divided by 129, that's 46%, okay? So somewhere between 27 and 46% are exposed. I think it depends on, again, we don't even know where this information came from, right? So that's something that you have to really kind of think about. All right, now, the National Law Review has released an article called Another Bill in Congress Seeks to Limit Non-Competes. Will this one go anywhere? And this one I definitely want to share because it's more relevant to our time frame and it's more relevant to what is happening in today's world. So that just gives you, I wanted to give you a background, right? And looking back to where we're standing today, where there's some potential holes in this, right? And we know, because all of us sit in front of the TV, doesn't matter if you're looking at it through, you know, however your field of vision is, right? We all have a world view, okay? We're all born and raised in different areas of the world. And so we see life as we see it based off of our influences, based off of how we're raised, based off of our beliefs and our core values. So we see these things. And then it'll also see things in filters because everybody does this. Every single human being does this one thing. We look at things as we see them. We don't take a step back to look at things as the stuff that we don't like. Okay. There's very few people that actually do that. All right. So this one was released on March 1st of this year. And on February 25th, the Workforce Mobility Act, which is a bipartisan bill to limit the use of non-compete agreements, was introduced in the U.S. Senate by Senators Chris Murphy, Todd Young, Kevin Cramer, and Tim Kaine, and in the House of Representatives by Scott Peters. Now, bipartisan, no kidding. Murphy is a Democrat, Young is a Republican, Cramer is a Republican, Kaine is a Democrat, and Scott Peters is a Democrat. Okay. This year's Workforce Mobility Act is the latest of several attempts in recent years at the federal level to restrict non-compete agreements through legislation. Now, despite bipartisan support at times, none has passed either the Senate or the House, and there are going to be a different result this time around. Good question. Now, there may be some reasons to actually think so, that the Biden administration is actually in favor of banning one or more forms of non-compete agreements on a national level. Back in December of 2020, the president-elect Biden released a plan for strengthening worker organization, collective bargaining, and unions statement. That was an actual plan moving forward, which stated that Biden will work with Congress to eliminate all non-compete agreements, except with the very few that are absolutely necessary to protect a narrowly defined category of trade secrets and outright ban of all non-poaching agreements. Good question. That would be interesting to see what that is. We'd have to read that. So if you want to read what that is, the document is called Plan for Strengthening Worker Organizing, comma, Collective Bargaining, comma, and Unions. You should be able to Google that. And I think it'll actually show up on his webpage. Yep, that'll show up on something called joebiden.com/empoweredworkers. Okay. that's where you'll find it. And it states that Biden will work with Congress to eliminate all non-compete agreements, like I said, except for the very few. And now, enactment of the Workforce Mobility Act in 2021, however, still seems really kind of like a long shot, according to the author. But if the bill progresses in Congress, it will be subject to very heavy lobbying from both sides of the issues. For employers, the bill's restrictions would have a major impact on businesses that seek to protect confidential information that may not rise to the level of trade secrets, including, and this is where it's really going to be an all-out drag out. I think these are the areas where we're really going to see the challenges coming out. Business strategy, which is huge, right? Huge. If a competing business, let's look at Amazon. So let's say, for example, Walmart got a handle on, they got access to Amazon's business strategy. Oh my gosh. Can you imagine the fallout of something like that? Would they use it? Absolutely they would, and vice versa, right? So business strategy and client-related information, we already talked about that in the very beginning. Now, if enacted, the bill also threatens to upend decades worth of legal precedents by introducing a federal statute that will be interpreted primarily in federal courts in an area that has been governed by practice and precedent permitted, premised on a patchwork of state common law and some state statutes. It says stay tuned at the bottom. Yeah, no kidding, right? Stay tuned. So that's where we are as a nation as it pertains to what is going on with these non-competes. I hope that gives you some information on where you can look, how you can educate yourself, because this is a moving beast. This is not going to go anywhere anytime soon. Be ready for this. And it is going to develop in a number of different ways, both at the state level and certainly at the federal level. But this is a big push that our president is making, and it is absolutely going to impact your business.